Up until now, Kansas City has been the largest metropolitan area in the entire country without a public auto museum, which is astonishing considering the vast amounts of auto-related history and heritage here that deserves to be documented, preserved, and honored. That changed on May 9th when the Kansas City Automotive Museum opened its doors in Olathe. Joining me now to explore the newly opened Kansas City Automotive Museum is Kyle Yarber. He's museum director and curator. And Kyle, nice to have you. Welcome.
Great being here.
You know, the Kansas City Auto Museum opened on May 9th, Kyle, as you well know, which is only 3 months ago. But for how long has this museum been a dream in Kansas City and been sort of on the drawing boards here?
It is a process that's been more than 3 years in the works.
Yeah.
A gentleman, a lawyer here in town, Jeff Wagner, who is also a car enthusiast who travels all over the
yeah.
When he travels, he visits car museums, and he suddenly realized, hey, how come we don't have a public car museum here in Kansas City? And so he got
Why didn't we have one here?
I don't know.
We didn't have one, did
we've
we?
We've had more what were car dealers that called themselves museums, but not really a history institution, which is what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And he got together with another with a group of car enthusiasts, and they set up a nonprofit organization to work toward that. And that was in early 2011. And so that's how long it took us before we actually got a facility open.
And what was the challenge of opening a museum like this? What did you spend those years doing to get this thing up and going?
Well, to get your doors open, it certainly takes money. And that was one of the big things. We had to put together the people that would do it, and our main two people in the museum. I'm the historical director. We also have Vrenny Fernandez, who is the marketing director, and we both came on board actually in the fall of 2011. And as I always say, the best way to get a job at a nonprofit is work there for 2 years for free.
That's a lot of truth to that.
A lot
happens around here at KCUR sometimes too. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we finally got enough funding to open an interim location. We got the funding late last year. And then we spent the in a mad dash, once we got a building offered to us, it was a mad dash to get doors open, get cars in, get history on the walls, and get people in the door.
Well, I can't help but notice, Kyle, that the name of the museum is the Kansas City Automotive Museum, and yet you're located in Olathe.
Some irony to that.
Yes, why is that?
When we first were looking at a dream of where we would hope to be, it would be more centrally located. But when you are a poor, underfunded nonprofit, you tend to go where you are offered space. And so this space became available to us, and we thought that it is better to have small, slightly out of the center part of the city doors open than to never get our doors open. The important thing was to get our doors open,
yeah.
to show people what a museum could be like. In 4 to 5 years, we hope to be in a facility 5 times this large.
And you're located down in Olathe. Where are you exactly?
We're on the corner of 116th and Strang Line. That's
15095 West 116th Street.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And put it on the map for us. What's it near?
It's not too far from Bass Pro,
mm-hmm.
although it's on the other side of the highway and just north of 119th.
Okay. Well, tell us about the museum itself, Kyle. What's your favorite part of it? What do you like most about the Kansas City Automotive Museum?
Well, this will be a huge surprise to you. As historical director, I love the history. The more I got into it, the more I just kept finding more and more fascinating episodes of history that took place here in Kansas City. For example, very few people have ever heard of a man named Homer Roberts, who was the first African-American car dealer in the country.
Down at 18th and Vine, right?
Yeah. He was he was a World War I veteran. He came home from the war. He was the first African-American commissioned officer in the Signal Corps, so already a fascinating individual. And he came home from the war and wanted to go into the auto business. Well, Kansas City was even though it wasn't part of the South, was a largely segregated, very segregated place. And African-Americans weren't necessarily welcomed in white-owned car dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
So he began work as a broker, working with these white-owned businesses, providing the largely the middle class, that African-American middle class with opportunities to purchase cars. Huh. And then he eventually became a dealer in his own right. He got a Helpmobile franchise in 1923. And there would not be another African-American car dealer in the country until after World War II. So mm-hmm. he was very much a pioneer.
We're visiting with Kyle Yarber about the new Kansas City Automotive Museum down in Olathe. There's another interesting aspect of our history that really caught my eye, this notion that Henry Ford set up the first plant to build the Model T outside of Detroit. It was right here in Kansas City.
Right here in Kansas City, yes.
Why did he do that?
Well, car companies in those days were still very regional. And you have to remember, Ford started in 1903, so it was very much just an upstart. And so in 1906, when he was looking to expand into the Midwest, Kansas City seemed like a natural central location for distribution. And he opened a factory-owned sales agency here on 11th Street. And then in 1912, he began assembling Model Ts here. And we happen to have one of the first ones he assembled here at the museum. The reason he began assembling cars here was basically shipping cost. In those days, cars were shipped in 40-foot box cars. You could fit three completely assembled Model Ts in there. But if he shipped just the parts, he could ship eight. And then once they got here, they unloaded the parts. And the first factory was, as it's described, a bunch of guys with wrenches and sawhorses that just simply put the parts together.
And it was cheaper for him to do it that way than the other way.
Absolutely. You could ship eight cars for the same shipping cost as three, depending on whether they were parts or completely assembled. But that was the beginning of the Winchester plant that was here in Kansas City. And he continued to expand that plant. And over a 12-year period, it became more than just a bunch of guys with wrenches. It became a full moving assembly line, became their first major production facility outside the Detroit area, right here in Kansas City.
Again, we're visiting with Kyle Yarber about the new Kansas City Automotive Museum based in Olathe. I gather you have cars in your museum collection, too. What kind of cars do you have?
Yes, we do. We have 30 cars on display.
Where do you get them?
As a poor, underfunded nonprofit, we don't own any of the vehicles. They are all loaned to us by local collectors. So it's, again, a great Kansas City connection. So our oldest car is a 1910 Stanley Steamer to remind us that gasoline wasn't always the choice of power for cars.
And a Stanley Steamer powered obviously by
steam. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And how did that work?
Well, you had where we would expect to find a gasoline engine, there was actually a boiler. So it's like a miniature version of the water heater in your house. It had a pilot light. It heated water a little hotter because it heated to a boil, create steam. And then there were cylinders, a steam engine underneath the rear seats, and the steam would cause pressure and would turn the rear wheels. So it was on a smaller scale, like a steam locomotive, but much smaller.
That's just amazing. And there can't be too many of those left on the entire planet, are there?
Well, surprisingly, my neighbor in Gladstone has two of them, and he lent us one.
Let's go over and knock on his door one night, Kyle, and say, can I borrow one of your cars?
He said that he had something he wanted to show me, and so I go to his house, he opens up his garage door, and there's two steam cars. You know, these cars are over 100 years old. They still operate. He's promised me a ride. I haven't gotten a chance to ride yet, but I can't wait to.
Because he still operates it.
Yes, yes.
What's a car like that worth, or do you know?
I don't know. That's the one area that I don't step my foot into, because every time there's an auction and you get two crazy rich guys bidding against each other, they set a new record. So I'll talk about what maybe they went for originally, and these were cars that would have been about $1,000 105 years ago.
And that's real money back in the day.
Oh, absolutely. That's more than most people made in a year. Cars were luxury items for wealthy people.
What else do you have in terms of cars in your collection?
Well, we have, that's our oldest. Our newest is one of the first Dodge Vipers built. So we have the 170th Dodge Viper, and a lot of people, this is the first time they've seen one up close, so that's a fun car to have, but we have many in between. We have several cars that were built here in Kansas City, including a 1955 Oldsmobile, a 1970 Chevelle Super Sport, which seems to be everybody's second favorite car in the museum.
Why is it the second favorite?
because we also have a 16-cylinder Cadillac from the early 30s, and that seems to be everybody's jaw-dropping favorite car.
Lots of fins and all that stuff on
No. This is from the 1930s, so it is just a huge car, twice as much engine as you'd expect in a car.
16 cylinders.
16 cylinders. It is a roadster, so you have a 16-cylinder car built on a limousine platform that is basically to haul around two people and their golf clubs. It is conspicuous consumption. It would have been the ultimate car of the Roaring Twenties. Unfortunately, they introduced it in January 1930, just a few weeks after the stock market crash. So
wow.
It was bad timing.
I wonder how fast a 16-cylinder car like that could move.
Well, the way the car was designed was, this is before automatic transmissions, it was designed so once you got the car moving, you put it in third gear, which was the top gear, and then you just drove it. So you could go from a walking pace to its top speed, which was about 100 miles an hour, without ever shifting. You did it all in third gear.
Wow. Again, we're talking about the new Kansas City Automotive Museum. Our guest is Kyle Yarber. Our phone number here to get our listeners involved, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Let's go to Matt from Baldwin City. Matt, good morning.
Hey, hi. Hey, what was the fuel that heated the water in the Stanley steamer?
In this case, it was kerosene. Now, there's some early steam cars that would use wood or coal, much like trains would, but this one has a kerosene tank.
Okay. So I wondered if, on the off chance, if it was alcohol, but there we are.
It probably could work. Probably any fluid that would burn could have worked. But and somebody probably tried it. I think people have tried everything with alcohol over the years.
Yeah. Hey, here's another quick question. Can you give some background on the Isetta dealership that was in Kansas City?
For the little micro cars from the 50s? Unfortunately, I don't know much about that. I would love to hear more about it. There were, of course, in the 1950s, a lot more imported cars were coming, and there were dealers that specialized in them. So if there is more information out there, I'd love to hear it, because that sounds like another exhibit for the museum.
Yeah, I heard that the dealership was kind of down near, I think, like 31st and Troost.
Hmm.
And the thing that doomed the Isetta was there was one part that needed to lubricate that back wheel on it, and it would tend to clog up, and that's what kind of ran it all into the ground.
Well, certainly the size of the car. This car was so small that it had one door that was on the front.
Right.
Wow.
And the steering wheel kind of opened with it.
Right. The steering wheel was gimbaled to the front door.
But this was the 1950s when everybody expected bigger and bigger cars, and here you bring basically a phone booth on wheels over. So it was not what most Americans wanted in the 1950s.
I wish it had hung around for a while. Matt, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, buddy.
You know, there's so much history in this museum, as we were talking about before. Cal, one that interested me the most was an exhibit that you guys have about George Kessler influencing the park and boulevard system in Kansas City, which has really impacted, you know, how the entire city flows together.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Well, up until sort of a city beautification program that started, Kansas City was a muddy cow town. And a lot of city leaders wanted to make Kansas City a nicer place to a more aesthetically pleasing place to live. And there was also a more practical concern, because many people that came to Kansas City to work would simply put up shacks wherever they could find them, and they would end up on muddy hillsides.
Yeah.
And many of them got a little too close to the homes of wealthy people. So they said, we need to create a park system. We need to beautify the city. George Kessler was a landscape architect who had studied in Europe. He was originally brought here to help design Merriam Park, and they kept him around for several decades. And so, for example, the Paseo was one of the boulevards he designed. He designed basically a system of large streets that would often be split and be very park-like, that connected different parks in the city. And basically, he's doing this in the 1890s. So, in fact, he's creating streets. Kansas City is preparing streets that would be perfect for the automobile when in the next decade the automobile arrives. Huh. And people would actually, in the early days, actually rent cars, come to Kansas City, rent cars just to be chauffeured around on the parks and boulevards
That's
here.
That's a great story. That's a great story. Back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Roger from Fairway. Roger, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's a curiosity of a question that I've heard on KCUR and even on Car Talk about the Corvette Museum up in Corvette, Michigan, where there was a sinkhole that opened up and swallowed a bunch of the cars.
Boy.
Just curious if you know anything about that.
Well, the Corvette Museum is in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and that's where the sinkhole was. Corvette does have a Missouri connection because from 1954 to 1981, it was built exclusively in St. Louis. And then in 1982, it moved to Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's where the production plant is, and that's where their museum is. We jokingly said that we checked for sinkholes before we opened earlier this year.
That was going to be my next question.
Okay. I'm sorry. I stole your thunder. But the Corvette Museum, and we, of course, being a sister museum, we know a lot of the people in that museum. They have been it's actually been a great publicity for them, this whole sinkhole thing. Their merchandise sales have skyrocketed, and they are actually putting some of the cars that fell down in the sinkhole on display. And they're supposed to the latest I heard was that they were going to keep part of the sinkhole as part of the display. So
yeah.
It's been
yeah. I heard that they were going to put glass over it so you could actually look down into it and watch, you know, walk over it. Even.
Okay, so it's like a mini version of the Grand Canyon now.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
Roger,
well, thanks.
Thank
that's,
you.
That's
appreciate
a really
it.
Neat update. Thank you.
You bet. You know, something our listeners may not know a whole lot about is that the iconic Country Club Plaza is that it was the first shopping center anywhere designed for customers arriving by car. How did that impact future construction, you know, in Kansas City and maybe even the entire country?
Oh, it's certainly changed all shopping malls that were built after that, any commercial districts. Commercial districts before this time were always downtown, were largely arrived at by public transportation, light rail. But very early on, J.C. Nichols realized transportation's key for all his developments, his residential developments, and so always made streets a very important part.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he financed the building of Ward Parkway. The shopping center was he was already building the parking garages before a lot of the stores.
Mm-hmm.
And he made sure that if you were going to downtown Kansas City from the south and the west, you went through Country Club Plaza. Every shopping mall built since that time has realized that the shoppers are going to arrive by car, and so it was internationally influenced.
Kyle, just one final thing you have at the museum. You commemorate Bonnie and Clyde's 1933 shootout with police at the Red Crown Tourist Court and their fast getaway in a V8-powered Ford.
Yes.
What do you have about to commemorate Bonnie and Clyde?
Well, we are coming up on the anniversary of the shootout. The motel was located very close to where the exit for the airport was.
Huh.
So it was way outside of town in those days.
Yeah.
They actually refer to it as Platte City because it was closer to Platte City than Kansas City at the time. But,
What do you have at the museum to commemorate it?
Well, we have a reader board where we tell the story.
Ah.
And we will have a presentation where we tell the story more in depth.
Yeah. Well, Kyle Yarber is with the Kansas City Auto Museum, and so good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Fantastic being here. Thank you for inviting us.